and welcome into the Friday holiday weekend edition of the Doug Russell Podcast. Hope everyone had a good Thanksgiving. We're going to jump right into it today. The last few days, if you haven't been on my social media, I've announced it a couple of times, but I've been filling in nationally on SportsMap Radio Network. But I've had the chance during some of those shows to have some great discussions. I'm going to bring some of them to you here on the podcast. And since the Badgers are COVID-ed out again this week, we're all NFL. And, of course, here in Wisconsin, if you're listening here in Wisconsin, the show is based in Wisconsin. We've got the Packers and the Bears coming up on Sunday night. I had a chance to see how the Bears were going to try to tackle this one. Here's my conversation with Chicago's ESPN 1000 host and reporter, Adam Abdallah. Adam, great to talk to you. Thanks for the time.
Thanks for having me.
So after losing four straight, what's the level of panic with this Bears team in the Windy City?
I wouldn't really say that there's a level of panic, because I think you're in one or two camps, right? You're in the camp that says, hey, this team can still make the playoffs. They have a chance to beat Green Bay. We saw that they're vulnerable in their loss to the Colts the other day. You know, you still have to play Detroit. You still have to play Houston. You still have to play Jacksonville. And you've got Minnesota one more time. So you're looking for maybe a shot at the playoffs. You know, you see the graphic every week on national TV. I'm sure we'll see it on Sunday night in the hunt. The Bears are still in the hunt. Or you're at this point hoping for losses because you want to see a coaching change and possibly a GM change as well. So you might be in the camp of rooting for a team to, you know, go 0-for the rest of the way. And it wouldn't be better than, you know, losing to Detroit on national TV to kind of put it to the owners that, hey, we need a new coach and we need a GM. This isn't working. We need a change. It's time for that.
2 years ago, Matt Nagy was the NFL's coach of the year. What happened?
I honestly no idea. And I don't think anybody has the idea. I think obviously you can go back to Ryan Pace and say that, you know, he hired the wrong coach. He got the wrong quarterback in the draft, obviously, with Mitchell Trubisky. But you're looking at an offense right now that is 31st in yards per play, points per game, first downs per game, points per game, and points per play. I mean, third down conversions, yards per game, and overall offensive efficiency. I mean, this is a team that if it wasn't for the Jets being so bad, this would be the worst offensive team in the league. And Matt Nagy had a chance. He brought in Nick Foles, who knows his system. You know, they had their pick at the time when they traded for Nick Foles. Everybody else was out there. Cam Newton was out there. There was the rumor that they made an offer to Teddy Bridgewater, but said he would have to compete for the job. There are even reports out there that they made an offer to Tom Brady, but he wanted to be on more of an Eastern team, so the travel wouldn't be as far for him. So you look at this team and you say Matt Nagy was given everything that he wanted or that he could have had. He brought in Bill Lazor, brought in John DeFilippo, guys he's familiar with, and this, quote, offensive genius that came over from the Chiefs has one of the worst offenses in the league. He finally gave up play calling last week, didn't really do anything. We'll see if it makes any more of a difference with Bill Lazor calling plays again against the Packers. But right now, this is a team that it comes down to, they have a horrible offensive line, they have no answer at quarterback, their weapons aren't performing as they had to, and once again, it's a year where Matt Nagy doesn't really have anything to do with this side of the ball, but you're seeing that the defense is once again carrying this team. This is a team that's averaging 19 points per game on offense and only giving up 21 points a game. So if they could score three more points a game, they might have a chance at this thing, and we'd be talking about a completely different team. But right now, the offensive genius that is Matt Nagy that Bears fans were sold has not been able to do anything with this offense.
I know both Nick Foles and Mitchell Trubisky have their own injury issues right now, but let's assume, just for the sake of the argument, that they were both 100%. Which quarterback is better suited for this offense? Foles, who has been the starter, or Trubisky, the number two overall draft pick that they traded up to get, who started the season for the Bears?
It's a good question because, you know, a few games ago, the answer was Nick Foles because he knows the offense. He has a better football mind than Mitchell Trubisky. He can comprehend, you know, blitzes and defensive shifts and all that kind of stuff. And he can find the open man, go through his progressions and find the next receiver, find the next receiver. But the problem is the offensive line hasn't given him any time. So the argument for Trubisky, while everybody knows he's not the better quarterback, the argument is if the offensive line is going to be so bad, Why have a statue in Nick Foles back there? Why not have someone that can extend a play with his legs? The problem with that is if Trubisky doesn't see his first read is open, he automatically tucks and run, and you're still having a three and out situation. So my personal answer is Nick Foles. I believe that Nick Foles is the better quarterback, because when it all comes down to it, if you need a conversion on third down, he's better suited with the ball than Trubisky. Because Trubisky, while he's been benched and then he comes in for the one play and he hurts his shoulder, I don't know if his confidence in there, and I know he's not mentally capable of going through Matt Nagy's offense and running a hurry up offense, running, you know, going to his second and third reads, waiting for these plays to be open. I know he's better on his legs, but I want the better football mind out there when it comes down to this. This team is going to make the playoffs. I still believe it's not with Mitchell Trubisky. It's going to be with Nick Foles, because when it comes down to it, he's going to make better decisions in crunch time.
Is there anybody in Chicago that's still on Mitchell Trubisky's side in his corner that, you know, isn't employed by the Chicago Bears?
Oh, absolutely. I think that there, I would say it's a 50-50 split amongst fans. I would say that fans have seen enough from Foles and say that Trubisky is, you know, why not at this point? You know, you haven't picked up the fifth-year option, so you know he's probably going to be gone at this point next year. Why not? It can't get any worse, right? That's the philosophy. If Foles is just going to stand back there, we might as well have someone back there that can, you know, tuck and run, like I said, who's a lot more mobile. The problem is with his shoulder, is he going to be a little skittish? This is also, like I mentioned, they didn't pick up his fifth-year option. So inside the mind of Mitchell Trubisky, is he worried about another injury heading into free agency where he might still be the best backup available? Like, if he is just going to be your backup quarterback, he's a very good backup. He's perfectly capable of learning the basics of an offense, and, you know, he's got the athletic ability to do that. He's not going to be a starter anywhere. But I would say he's going to make a bunch of money as a backup for the rest of his career. The question is, does he want to risk injury heading into that? But I definitely think that there is and they become more vocal as the game goes on. As the sacks pile up for Nick Foles, that vocal minority comes up on Twitter, and we get the phone calls on Monday at ESPN Chicago, and they say, hey, you know, why not put Trubisky? What could hurt at this point?
Adam Abdallah from ESPN 1000 in Chicago. He joins us on the Progressive Guest Line here on Sports Map Radio. Take me back to draft night 4 years ago when Mitchell Trubisky was drafted. Not a lot of college experience when he was at North Carolina. Still, the Bears made him such a high draft pick. What was the feeling in Chicago when he was selected by the Bears?
I mean, it was definitely a who is this guy and why did they move up one spot to get this guy? Because if you look at the draft, I believe most people, at least in Chicago, were scouting. If you watch and you go back to that Sun Bowl against North Carolina and at Stanford, most people were scouting Solomon Thomas. And most people were saying, hey, if the Bears could get Solomon Thomas, obviously he didn't pan out, but that's the pick. And there's a story that goes back a couple years, about a year maybe, from the Chicago Tribune that went through it and went through what Ryan Pace did. And basically he had scouts go out and scout everybody, scout all the quarterbacks, and he fell in love with Mitchell Trubisky as a player, and he wanted Mitchell Trubisky. So he went rogue. He didn't know, you know, the scouts didn't know who he was going to pick. The coaching staff didn't know who he was going to pick. John Fox didn't know who he was going to pick. And when he went up there, not him physically, but when he put the card in and it was Mitchell Trubisky, it was more of a, who is this guy? He couldn't start, you know, until his senior year, and he's at North Carolina, and he hasn't been that great, and there's still, you know, there's the guy on the board who beat Alabama once and almost beat him a second time, and then, you know, the hype around Patrick Mahomes that he's this great offensive player, but his defense has been killing him, and so he hasn't gotten, you know, they haven't had the wins there, but he's a good talent too. You're kind of seeing this, well, who is this guy? And you traded up one spot to get him, so there was definitely question marks around him from the start of his time here in Chicago. I remember when, after they drafted him and he went to a Bulls game, you know, the Bulls have him, he's got good seats and everything, and the crowd boos him when they show him on the Jumbotron. So that just goes to show you what they – he hadn't even played a game yet, and he was getting booed at the United Center. So that just kind of shows you what Chicago thought of him at the time. It was more of like a, what, why this guy at this point with this kind of trading up to one spot?
All right, so far in the, what, 9 or 10 minutes that we've had you on, Adam, we've talked about a franchise that the portrait has been painted of being in complete disarray. Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy, the seats are hot underneath them. But again, as I pointed out, 2 years ago, you had the coach of the year in the NFL, and this is a team right now, as you point out correctly, still in the hunt for the playoffs at 5-5. That doesn't necessarily seem to mesh up when you put those two portraits together. So which is it? I mean, is this a team that's in complete disarray, or is this a team that could be a playoff contender?
I think this is a team that, when they are clicking on all cylinders, could be a tough out in the first round of the playoffs. That being said, Matt Nagy gets credit in that coach of the year for the defense. The defense carried that team. You know, everybody said, oh, Trubisky had this great game in the second half of the Eagles playoff game, and then the double doink happened, and we all haven't been able to live that down ever since. But the defense was carrying that team. The defense is carrying this team again. They don't have the turnovers that they had from a couple of years ago, but this is a top five defense in almost every single metric. The problem is, if you look at, you know, the Football Power Index or DVOA or whatever you want to use, this is a bottom of the barrel offense and a top tier defense. This is a Super Bowl caliber defense. If the offense could put together 24 points a game, we'd be talking about a Super Bowl contending team, because you would say, okay, just, you know, Nick Foles, Trubisky, whoever it is, just go in and don't screw it up. You know, just manage the game, move the ball down the field, run the ball effectively, and the defense will hold a team. If the defense is holding, you know, teams in the 2020 NFL to under 21 points, then you should have a chance to win every single game. They're losing games. You know, they have three losses by 7 points or less this season. So this is a team that just feels like another year of a wasted defense, and that's why people want change, because you brought in an offensive head coach. You brought in someone from under the Chiefs system, and he's trying to run a Chiefs system without Chiefs players. He hasn't adapted Matt Nagy to the kind of players that he has, and that's the biggest problem. And, you know, you hear the Pat Fitzgerald's names. You see the Jim Harbaugh names. You see the Eric Bieniemy names. Everyone wants change right now, because there is a window, however small it is, because you have this amazing defense that is carrying you through the season once again.
Final thing for you, as we're joined by ESPN 1000's Adam Abdallah on the Progressive Insurance guest line, looking ahead to the schedule, and quite frankly, I'm surprised that the Bears and the Packers haven't played yet, but still, it'll be the Packers and the Bears this coming Sunday night, followed by, for Chicago, Detroit, you never know what you're going to get from the Lions. Houston, they've had a coaching change this season. Minnesota seems to be on the upswing, but you know, you never know what you're going to get from the Vikings as well. Jacksonville is awful, and then the Bears end off the season with Green Bay. Of those six games, and I hate doing predictions, but I'm going to put you on the spot, how many games do you think that they will win, and how many games do you think they need to win to get to the playoffs?
I think they need to win four of those games. I think they, you know, they're on the outside looking in with the Rams and the Cardinals, because the NFC West is just a juggernaut right now. I think they need to win every game except for those Green Bay games, because you can't, I don't know how they're going to compete with Green Bay unless, you know, during the bye week, and Matt Nagy is statistically or off the, against the spread, whatever you want to look at, horrible when he has extra time to prepare. It's like he's studying for the test too hard during this off week. And so he's really bad, you know, the first game of the season. And then after the bye, he's been historically bad too in his short time with Chicago. But I think they're going to need to win nine games. And I can make the case that they will win four more games. I can make the case that they'll beat Detroit, Houston, Minnesota, and Jacksonville, because they played Minnesota close that entire game. The only games I can't make the case for are the two games left with Green Bay. So I can say that they're going to be a nine win team just because they got off to, you know, that 5-1 start, and then it's been a downhill roller coaster, just like a giant drop ever since. But I can easily make the case that they win three to four more games and somehow sneak into that last spot in the NFC.
He is Adam Abdallah from ESPN 1000. You can hear him on the air. Also, you got a podcast on ESPN 1000 as well?
Yeah, you can check us out every weeknight from 6 to 8 Central, Bleck and Abdallah. And also, you can find us wherever your podcasts are sold.
Adam A. Abdallah on Twitter as well. Adam, appreciate the time and the insights so much. I guess we're going to find out just how good this Bears team is against the Packers in primetime on Sunday Night Football. Appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
I feel so bad for the nation that they go from last week's Sunday Night game to this week's Sunday Night game. Thanks for having me, Doug. Thanks again.
Yeah, you can't always forecast what games are going to be the good ones, like Thursday's Thanksgiving Day games. Four teams, all with losing records, including the Detroit Lions. They played an ugly football game, getting smashed by the Houston Texans. I caught up with fan-sided NFL reporter Cole Thompson and asked him about embattled Lions coach Matt Patricia. Is this it for him in the Motor City?
That writing's been on the wall for a minute. I mean, you look at how the way that the players reacted in the post-game conference. You had TJ Hockenson actually defending Matt Patricia, saying how he gave him an opportunity. He will always support the guy who gave him a shot to be a top 10 pick. And then you listen to Matthew Stafford, who's a little bit older and a little bit more wiser, and says, it's not my job. It's, you know, I have no control over it, whether he's gone or not, which to me is basically saying, get him gone or I will be gone. One of the two is not working out. You look at how this Detroit team has been run to the ground, specifically on defense. They rank now 31st in run defense. They were able to stop the run for Houston, but Houston was also playing down a running back. You look at their passing secondary, they now rank 29th in the NFL. And on third down conversion, I believe they've allowed a total of 46.3% of conversions. So that's second most behind the Tennessee Titans in third down stops. This was a guy who was brought into the Motor City because Jim Caldwell could not get over that hump. He finished with three seasons with 500 records or better. And unfortunately, they still did not think that he was the guy. And then you look at the Patriot way with Bob Quinn and with Patricia and what they've learned under Bill Belichick. And now you're seeing this thing just not really working anywhere outside of Foxborough. So it's just very clear that the entire pressing needs during that offseason when they went to go get Patricia, he was a hot name, they decided to run one more year with him. And it just didn't make a lot of sense because of what he had done with even the talent surrounding him on both sides of the ball. So I just feel like if he's not fired, they're just doing it to make sure that they're in a prime spot to either maybe draft their future quarterback, maybe be in line to draft one of the top wide receivers if they lose Kenny Galladay this offseason. But they're now, I think, playing with Patricia because they are very similar to what Adam Gase is going through. It actually helps them to keep the guy.
Why hasn't the Patriot way worked, whether it's Josh McDaniels in Denver, whether it's Romeo Crennel in Cleveland, Charlie Weiss, wherever Charlie Weiss has gone? At first it was Notre Dame and, you know, then Kansas and then wherever. Bill O'Brien in Houston. I mean, the list goes on and on, and now we're talking about Matt Patricia in Detroit. Why has it worked in one place, specifically New England, but not anywhere else, in your opinion?
I think it's more so because of you see what Belichick is. He's a guy who develops young talent with guys who are, you know, diamonds in the rough. He goes out and he makes sure that when their time, when they're either about to peak or they're coming off their peak or they're about ready to have the highest trade level of all time, they trade players and they go use that for draft capital. And I just, you don't see that kind of be done in Houston. You don't see that kind of be done in Detroit. You don't see that in Denver. You see these teams just be very average, and then what they do is they just let free agents walk. I mean, you look at Houston a few years ago, Kareem Jackson and Tyrann Mathieu never even got offered a contract. They just were told, thank you so much for your job. You know, now go ahead and you're off to somewhere else. I mean, when you see that, you don't find ways to make savvy plays that allow you to stay in contention. That's why I think it doesn't work. Belichick is very smart when it comes to seeing a player's regression, and he is willing to give up on them as soon as possible. And I mean, you saw it again this past season when he let Jamie Collins walk, when he traded away Daron Harmon, who's been struggling immensely in coverage this year. There's something about when he's scouting these players, he understands what their peak is, and when they start to decline, he immediately lets them go. And now they're usually ending up in teams like Miami or in teams like Detroit because they know their defensive coordinators. They know their guys. That's where the problem therein lies. And I think that that's where you see a difference between Belichick and from anywhere else. And also, just to keep this in mind, he's also the GM, and sometimes you're also butting heads with a GM because if you don't have that same power that you do at Foxborough.
Well, Bill O'Brien was the GM in Houston, but Deshaun Watson looks like a different player without him right now.
100%. It's actually really funny. Since Deshaun Watson has played without Bill O'Brien, he has 15 touchdowns, zero turnovers. Keep that in mind because he
wow.
also has, 15 touchdowns, zero turnovers, but he also has a significantly higher passer rating. He has a significantly higher completion ratio. I think it's by 10% higher, and he's thrown four games with over 300 yards. So it really shows that the offensive play calling was the problem. And I think the one thing that you have to really like is that Romeo Crennel at 73 understands what works and what doesn't. What definitely does not work is trusting a run game that's as putrid as Houston. And what you do is you allow short passes to guys like Kiki Coutte, to guys like Randall Cobb in the slot, and then every once in a while you go deep. And that's why Houston had those two big connections to Will Fuller in Detroit yesterday. And that's just basic minding coaching. And that's something that I think that when you look at on paper, it's great to see, you know, Watson being progressive, but imagine if they would have let go of O'Brien after the 24-0 fiasco in the divisional round. You probably would have re-signed Carlos Hyde to add to that run game, who's having a good season as a secondary runner in Seattle, even though he's been injured. You would have never traded away DeAndre Hopkins, and you still would have probably been able to get Brandon Cooks on the same deal you did with that second-round pick that you had. So overall, there were still moves that could have been made, and these moves likely would have kept them in the playoff hunt going into the final month of play, because they're playing their best football right now, and this really is a team that could have been, I think, at least a fringe playoff contender, maybe not a full-fledged, you know, actual Super Bowl leading team. But with Deshaun Watson and how this offense has looked the past few weeks, they really kind of disappoint me because they were so fun. And the only reason they're not where they are is because they decided to keep it on with Bill O'Brien for another year.
Cole Thompson, NFL writer for FanSided, joining us here on SportsMap Radio Network on the Progressive Insurance Guest Line. Well, as long as we're piling on, you mentioned DeAndre Hopkins. How good has he been for Kyler Murray in the waning days of Larry Fitzgerald's career in Arizona?
So the one thing that I did, I was actually speaking to a scout not too long ago about him, and the thing that everyone said about Kyler was, use it in baseball terms, he was great at hitting homers, he was great at hitting singles. But that doubles and triples area, which is the intermediate part of the field, he struggled immensely to connect on. He had more big throws of 20-plus yards last year of completions than he did actually of those 12 to 15 yarders. That's where DeAndre Hopkins really came in. And for the price they got for him, which was an expiring old age running back and a second-round pick, he's been a steal. He leads the NFL in receiving yards. I think he's second in the NFL in big plays on the year. I think he's third in the NFL in receptions on the year. He's been nothing but, you know, supportive for this guy. And even though he's only got four touchdowns, every touchdown has been a monumental one for Kyler Murray. Murray now becomes the second player besides Cam Newton to rush for 1,000 yards, score 25 touchdowns, and throw for 6,000 yards in his first 25 games. And they will be meeting up on Sunday in Foxborough to see the old style of dual-threat quarterback meets the new style of dual-threat quarterback. And one thing that you have to keep in mind, Larry Fitzgerald, who will miss his first game since 2014 due to COVID-19, now will have an opportunity to see DeAndre maybe even expand his role more than what he already was. I think also you got to keep in mind Christian Kirk having a fantastic year as the team's number two really does help out with Murray as well.
I want to go back to yesterday in Dallas for just a second, because anytime that I think of 4th and 10 on your own 24, for me, the most natural play is to call a fake punt. What
really?
Was Mike
that's mine too.
What was Mike McCarthy thinking?
The part that bothers me is not what he was thinking. It was he defended it after. I mean, that's where the problem lies. Is he afterwards said, I support what I did. I understood what was at stake, and I decided to go for it this way. No, admit you're wrong. Just admit you were wrong. That's where the problem is, and that's where you look at how, you know, when the Jerry Jones hire was made, everyone was very skeptical, and then you listen to his comments about how, oh, I didn't even watch the NFL last year. I was too busy prepping for next season. No, you can't make comments like that. Mike McCarthy, as much as I liked him in Green Bay and as much as I do think he is a good coach, he has struggled this year, and it's not because of injuries to guys like Dak Prescott. It's not because of a depleted defense that Mike Nolan has completely run into the ground. It's because of bonehead play calling, and he's done this multiple times. This, though, is the cream of the crop. I don't see it getting any better. I also don't see Jerry moving on from him this year. So for Dallas fans, this is a really lose-lose situation, in my opinion.
Mitch Trubisky back as the starting quarterback for the Chicago Bears. The rest of the NFC North, I think, rejoices because of that. But how can he get back and you know, start to play like something that the Bears thought they saw when they drafted him with the number two overall pick?
You have to target Allen Robinson. I mean, that's the biggest thing. Allen Robinson is a cheap top 15 wide receiver in the NFL, and both Nick Foles and Mitchell Trubisky never utilized him to his best. They decided to go for deep balls to Anthony Miller, who right now can't catch a thing. They're going to deep to little dump passes to Tariq Cohen. He's now out for the year. You have to rely so heavily on Allen Robinson. This is where you find your bread and butter. You connect with him on third and two. You connect with him on first and seven. You connect with him on, you know, on second and 15. Just find Allen Robinson and make him do most of the work. Because of, I think once you get into the red zone, you can trust your tight end. This, though, is where you have to win, is with Allen Robinson. He is so underutilized in the Windy City, and I want to see him have a better career. Keep this in mind. His career of quarterbacks has been Christian Hackenberg, Blake Bortles, and Mitchell Trubisky. I mean, that's his career of quarterbacks. Can anyone else just feel worse for the guy? It's so bad. And, I mean, I have a friend who made a video talking about how you need to donate to, you know, depleted wide receivers. This is the winner of the most depleted wide receivers of all time, hands down.
Last couple of minutes with Cole Thompson from FanSided, talking some NFL football. By the way, you can follow him on Twitter at Mr. Cole Thompson. What's been the biggest surprise for you this season so far in the NFL?
I mean, that's really tough. I want to go with Miami. I actually really think it is Miami, because if they were in the middle of a rebuild and they're still winning, that's somewhere where you look at this team and go, okay, we made the right hire. Brian Flores and what he's done has earned himself Coach of the Year. And I know that a lot of people are going to go, but what about the Steelers with Mike Tomlin? What about, you know, what about with Green Bay and Matt LaFleur? You know, what he's doing with no wide receivers? What about? No. It's Brian Flores, because of he took a risk with Tua Tagovailoa. I believe last week he made the right call benching Tua, because if he knew that nothing was going to happen. And he's making him pretty much say, our defense is going to do a job. We're going to allow you to go out there and just work. You're going to work and just do the basic minimum. If you can get that done, we're in a prime spot to win, and it's working. I mean, he was 3-0 going into last week against Denver. He was going to a game where the altitude is really rough up there. On top of that, it was his first cold game I think he's played in the last 4 years. So, I mean, there was always going to be struggles, but they're still in the playoff hunt. That's the biggest thing, and I don't see them actually slowing down anytime soon. I think Buffalo is going to win the division, but you look at their schedule, they actually have a pretty easy path towards the postseason, and the way that they are playing defensively, if Tagovailoa can just be good enough, he doesn't have to do a lot. Just continue to throw 175, maybe a touchdown a game, maybe 230, limit the turnovers. You are going to see Miami go to the playoffs, and that's going to be a huge plus for Brian Flores and his coaching stock, and it's going to be actually a big plus for the Patriot way working anywhere outside of Foxborough.
You're looking at my notes. I was just going to say, I mean, this score one for the Bill Belichick coaching tree. There's finally one guy that's succeeding.
And the reason why I think he's succeeding is Belichick never named him the defensive coordinator. He only had enough say. So what that does is, and I'm starting noticing this in college, Sam Pittman at Arkansas was an offensive line coach for the Georgia Bulldogs. What he did was he brought in a guy who knows offense in Kendall Briles and said, you're going to run my offense. He went and got Barry Odom, who just was fired from Mizzou, and said, you're going to run my defense. Brian Flores did the exact same thing. He said, Chan Gailey, you're going to run my offense. You're going to run my defense. I'm going to be just a little bit in both, and I'm going to make this work. And guess what? It's working. That's why it works. Belichick has always allowed his coordinators to do something. This time, they went out and they got the linebackers coach. He knows I'm not a coordinator. I'm just going to have my nose in everywhere. And I think you're going to start seeing that trend work actually a little bit more. Wide receivers coaches get promoted to head coaches. You're not going to see these offense coordinators because of they want too much power. And I think that's what happened with O'Brien, and that's what happened with Patricia, and that's why it failed. That's why I also think Josh McDaniels is probably only going to be suited to go coach in New England, because if every other team is going to know, he's going to be too power hungry. Flores waited, he did his job, and he's allowing his coordinators to coordinate and him just be a part of everything. That's why I think it works.
Cole Thompson, you can follow him on Twitter, at Mr. Cole Thompson from FanSided. I just followed him. You should, too. Cole, we appreciate the time. Thanks for joining us on the Progressive Insurance Guest Line.
Hey, anytime, Doug.
A great talk with FanSided's Cole Thompson. Looking forward to having him on again, both on the air and, of course, here on the podcast as well. If you're interested, I've got one more national show Saturday afternoon from 1 until 5 Central Time. You can find the show at sportsmapradio.com or on the free Sportsmap Radio app. Again, that's from 1 until 5 Central Time, Saturday afternoon, coast to coast again on Sports Map Radio Network. Quick shout out, by the way, to those that noticed that we made a mistake. We had accidentally uploaded the wrong show on Monday. Instead of uploading the proper show, the Monday show, we accidentally uploaded last Friday's show twice. I suppose it happens. We're all human. But it has since been rectified. So Monday's show is up. If you subscribe, it probably popped up on your Insta feed. We'd love for you to subscribe and just, you know, not have to download it on your own. It'll just download it by itself for free. All I'll say is, if you haven't listened to Monday's show yet, if you like the Benny Hill theme to perfectly describe the Packers turnover fest against the Colts, I guess you'll dig Monday's show. But that's why we try to make it as easy as we can to contact us. When we screw up, let us know. We want to get you the right shows. So thank you for those that did reach out to us. We really do appreciate it. Our email address, very simple, DougRussellPod@gmail.com. Again, DougRussellPod@gmail.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram with the handle @DougRussellPod. You can search for the Doug Russell Podcast on Facebook and YouTube. And if you want everything in one place, the easiest place to find us, very simply, DougRussellPod.com. Just go to DougRussellPod.com. You'll see our social medias. You will see our videos that we put up on YouTube. And obviously, you can download all of our podcasts from that site as well. DougRussellPod.com. We're back here on Monday. We'll have a complete Packers-Bears recap. And believe it or not, it's basketball season. Yeah, wrap your mind around that. 2020, just doing 2020 things, I suppose. Anyway, have a great weekend. We'll see you then.